This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Brock Huard will join us about 25 minutes from now. So is football coming back? NFL? College? Will there be fans in the stands? Brock's more dialed in than I, although I'm awfully dialed in. But we'll see Brock have to say about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. If you're listening right before the news, that really is amazing. That a kid going to college, from Washington, going to college in Idaho, tries to get a fishing license, and since he has an Idaho driver's license because of COVID-19, he cannot get a Washington fishing license. In a state where illegals can get driver's licenses. But a kid going to college in Idaho cannot get a fishing license right now. Does that make much sense? I'm getting all kinds of emails. You can always text me as well at 98973. Mike pointed out, and I noticed this a couple nights ago. I went to the grocery store. And, of course, as you come through the checkout line, they've got these big, flashy machines where you can buy lottery tickets. And I saw a couple people standing and, you know, pushing those buttons, making all kinds of contact where thousands of other fingers have been. And listener Mike writes, Washington's lottery continues to operate. Most employees are working from home, but there is a list of employees that are determined essential and continue to report to work for normal duties. They've had record sales 3 weeks in a row. The state has been benefiting from the stimulus checks that have been sent out. They are also benefiting from casinos being closed. The state continues to operate using double standards. Yeah, can someone explain to me why the Washington Lottery, the biggest ripoff gambling game there is? I've told you about that. That in most gambling games, horse racing's bad. Horse racing has about a 20% house take. Blackjack, you play with good basic strategy. You can get the house edge down to about 5%. Craps, you can get the house edge, depending on the odds they offer, to less than 1%. The lottery has a 50% house take. It's essentially the same as when the mob was running numbers games on the streets of New York City and Newark, when the mafia was in total control. And so think about that. If you own a little business that's still shut down, but Jay Inslee has decided that the state lottery, so people can take the stimulus checks that the government's sending them and gamble it away, that is still an essential business here in Washington. How unbelievable is that? And that's because government has not cut a penny. As Jay Inslee said at his press conference yesterday, the private sector is getting slaughtered economically. You know, 20, 30% reduction in revenues, earnings. The government at the state level, Jay Inslee was asked, where have you cut? And he admitted he has not cut one penny. And so while you private sector business owners and you unemployed workers are getting absolutely slaughtered, the Washington Lottery continues to operate as an essential business. Again, if you can make sense of all of this, you're a better person than I, because none of this makes any sense at this point. I had a funny thing to show you. I don't want to brag about the effort that goes into this show, but I saw a written quote last night, and it took me about a half hour to find the audio of it. And I just, it just took so long that I have to share it with you. Now, as you may recall, Donald Trump, a couple of days ago at the Fox News town hall, he outraged the media because he compared himself to Abraham Lincoln.
Look, I am greeted with a hostile press, the likes of which no president has ever seen. The closest would be that gentleman right up there. They always said Lincoln. Nobody got treated worse than Lincoln. I believe I am treated worse.
So, the media went crazy because Trump compared how he's treated to how Lincoln's treated. CNN.com. Trump, stop comparing yourself to Lincoln. Washington Post. Trump invokes Lincoln to explain his bullying and bragging at coronavirus briefings. Oh, the media was outraged. How dare any president compare themselves to Abraham Lincoln and how he was treated? And then I did a search to see the media criticism of this soundbite. I spent a half hour finding the 6-second soundbite last night.
I mean, those guys were tough. Lincoln, they used to talk about him almost as bad as they talk about me.
Whoa. I did a CNN search. Did you tell Obama, stop comparing yourself to Lincoln? No, couldn't find that. Washington Post. Obama invokes Lincoln to explain his... No, I couldn't find that either. It's weird. It's almost like the media is biased. I'm just kidding. The media is so fair and down the middle, and they're treating Trump exactly the way they treated Obama. It's just that I can't find any tangible evidence of that. It's just that they didn't go berserk when Obama compared his treatment to that of Lincoln. I mean, last night, Colbert, Kimmel, Fallon, they all made fun. Trump compared himself to Lincoln. I searched to see all the late night jokes when Obama compared himself to Lincoln. There weren't any. I don't know. I'm starting to think there might be a teensy little bias in the media. And that's weird for me to even say, because we all know there's no such thing as fake news, right? Oh, man. Sorry, I have coffee. Hold on. Let me turn off my mic. Okay, there we go. Tucker Carlson had a fantastic segment last night about government and media hypocrisy with all of this. Were you aware, Nicole, of this English professor dude and what he had done until this segment?
No, not aware at all.
It's unbelievable. There's a professor named Neil Ferguson who is supposedly some expert on pandemics. Such an expert that the politicians in the UK asked him to help them craft their stay-at-home policy. And that's exactly what Neil Ferguson said, is we should do what they're doing in Wuhan province, China. We should just keep everybody confined and get the streets empty to get past this
thing. To adopt sort of community measures which have been adopted, particularly in places like Wuhan and China, where you try to reduce contacts between people in the community. So the sorts of measures which are important are, first of all, if anybody has any sort of respiratory disease, cold, anything, stay at home until those symptoms are fully resolved.
Yeah, stay home. Don't go out until your symptoms are fully resolved. So that's what he helped craft and impose on all the people of the UK. So let me tell you a little bit about this dude, Neil Ferguson. What's that, Nicole?
I just said smart guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that he's telling everybody else how to live their lives. But there's only one little problem. Neil Ferguson, in mid-March, by his own admission, was found to have coronavirus. And within 2 weeks of him being tested positive, he was having his married mistress come over to his apartment to have sex with him. So while he was telling all of the UK to stay at home and not expose anybody, because you might have it, when he definitely had it, he was having sex with his married mistress. She would then go back to her home and expose her husband and her children to whatever she might have contracted from Neil Ferguson. And the guy who shut down the UK is a stinking hypocrite. But then what Tucker Carlson did, just brilliantly, was he went through just all the politicians in our country who are rife with hypocrisy. And, of course, that's been my biggest criticism of Jay Inslee, is no consistency whatsoever. The Washington lottery thing being a primary example. But, for example, the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, has told everybody, stay home, don't take any non-essential trips. But then he will climb in his SUV with his security detail and drive to Brooklyn so he and his wife could go walk in a park. Exactly what he told everybody else not to do. And a citizen saw that and called de Blasio out.
Seriously, you guys have a park. You live in the middle of a park. You don't need to not essentially travel to Brooklyn.
Come on, guys.
Come on, you won't even open roads for people of all backgrounds. I'm not going to give it a break. Like, this is selfish behavior. This is the epitome of non-essential travel.
No, no, no. It's non-essential travel for citizens. If you're in government, you can do whatever you want. And another example, Justin Trudeau, the blackface-wearing Prime Minister of Canada, right before Easter, he said, stay at home. It's what Jesus would do.
So as we reflect on Jesus's message of love and compassion, let's think about our healthcare workers and essential service workers who are on the front lines every day. Let's put into practice what it truly means to love our neighbors as ourselves by making sacrifices to protect their health. Let's stay home for them.
Make a sacrifice for everybody. Stay home for them. Days later, Justin Trudeau went to Quebec to his family's lake house so he could be with other more distant family members. He didn't stay home. He just wanted everybody else to. It was like the cut I played last week. The Chicago mayor has shut down all of the barbershops and hair salons, but everyone noticed, hey, you just got a haircut.
I'm the public face of the city. I'm on national media, and I'm out in the public eye. And, you know, I'm a person who I take my personal hygiene very seriously. As I said, I felt like I needed to have a haircut. I'm not able to do that myself, and so I got a haircut.
So you cannot, but she's a public figure. So she got one. She said she takes her personal hygiene seriously. This is a politician who admits that she thinks all of the underlings are the unwashed masses. And then there was Chris Cuomo, the CNN anchor, who had coronavirus. And while he had it, he came out of his house and was standing outside talking to his wife at their vacation place in the Hamptons with his wife and kids. His wife later got coronavirus, presumably from him. But a biker came by, and a neighbor, and said, hey, you hypocrite, your brother just told all of us that we're supposed to stay home, especially if we have symptoms. You have it, and here you are standing outside?
I just said, don't you have the coronavirus? Shouldn't you be quarantined? And I think his next words were, what the hell do you know about this? What do you know about the rules? I said, you're not supposed to be out here. Nobody had gloves on. Nobody had masks on.
So Chris Cuomo, when he had the coronavirus, was standing outside talking up close to family members who eventually transmitted it to, apparently. And he had no problem infecting others when he had coronavirus. A couple of nights ago, Chris Cuomo showed video of people in parks in New York City too close together. And, oh, man, was he angry at them.
But there's also feel, fatigue. I've had it. Season's changing. It's getting warm. Want to get back to it. Look at these fools. Fools. I know they want to be out there. Fools, it's not about you. What about the other people? And look, I'm not going to castigate you. That's not my job. I'm not your daddy.
Huh? You're not going to castigate them. You just called them fools for doing exactly what you did a couple weeks earlier, except most of those people probably don't have coronavirus, but you did, Chris. But again, he's in the media, and he's more important than everybody else. If you're a politician, if you're a media elitist, then a totally different set of rules applies to you. But you are going to still impose on everybody else the things that are crushing our economy. So once again, you got to ask the question, is this about taking care of public health, or is this more, has this morphed into some weird power trip of human control where crashing the economy is maybe not even that undesirable because of the desire to get here in Washington a state income tax? And then I got to play for you just one more. This was on Chris Cuomo's show just last night, but he had his brother, Governor Andrew, on. And, oh, do I have that one? Yeah, here. And Andrew Cuomo, 20,000 people have died in New York State, 25 times the number here in Washington. But Chris Cuomo on CNN, little brother of Governor Andrew, and this was just nauseating.
False. Do you think False. That you are an attractive person now because you're single and ready to mingle? Do you really think you are some desirable single person and that this is not just people's pain coming out of them?
I think beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Listen to you. You got an answer for anything. You're feeling pretty good about yourself these days, aren't you?
20,000 people have died. A columnist in the New York Post. They had 1,700 deaths that they just reported in nursing homes because Chris Cuomo mandated that hospitals send COVID-19 positive people to nursing homes if they were of that age. And now they have another 1,700 nursing home deaths. And he's on TV talking about being on Ellen. That was a little earlier in that clip. Being on Ellen and single and ready to mingle and how good he feels about himself. Oh, this is weird, man. The media elite, the politicians, they're just having a good time with this now. And meanwhile, 22 million Americans newly unemployed. Unemployment rate 20, 30%. Who knows how high it's going to skyrocket? It's getting very strange to watch all of this. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. My buddy Brock Huert's going to drop by for his weekly visit. We'll do that coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
It's hump day with Huert.
Ooh, it is. Check. Brown 24 Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell. Lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up. Making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Wednesday afternoon. That means it's time for a weekly visit with Brock Huert. 710 ESPN Seattle, Fox Sports. Good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Mr. Monson. You holding up okay?
So last night, yes, I am. Thank you
okay,
for asking.
Okay, yeah.
Last night, Brock and I are just chit-chatting on the phone, and all of a sudden, I hear this loud noise in the background while we're talking. And Brock, you said, did you hear that? And I thought you had just flushed the toilet.
Yes.
But you,
yes, some remarkable things that happened as I've sat on that deck, Dory, and talked to you. Two or three things in my life that I have never experienced at any time before, since, have occurred while on that deck talking to you. One of them, if you remember, was a bear, a black bear, while I was talking to you in segment.
That's right.
Walked right across my yard, and it was pretty remarkable and amazing. Yes, and last night, that thunderstorm that I know, I saw that a lot of people were tweeting about it in different parts of the area. Did it eventually get to you down up in your neck?
No, and I'm really disappointed because you are east of me.
Yes.
Nicole is west of me, and Nicole was sitting on a hill, and she was recording the thunderstorm over Edmonds and the Sound, and somehow it missed me. It got the east and it got the west, because I love a good thunderstorm.
That was amazing. I think the loudest I've ever heard was actually a mission trip we did to the Dominican Republic, and it shook Macy out of her bed. She didn't wake up, but she fell out of bed and hit the floor. And we had to pick her up and put her back in bed. That was the loudest. I thought the world was ending. But last night for this area, you know, that it was a bright flash of light. It was right on top of us, because it hit, and it was a little more than a flush into the toilet to me. But I'm glad that that's what it came across to you.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, my biggest thunderstorm ever, and it was a week before 9/11, my wife and girls and I, we were back in Baltimore watching the Mariners play at Camden Yards.
Wow.
And it was a trip with a bunch of listeners. And there were two outs in the ninth inning, and all of a sudden, it was a rainstorm like we never see here in Western Washington.
Yes.
And there were rivers running down the stairs and the aisles at Camden Yards.
Wow.
And we walked back to our hotel, which is on the other side of the Inner Harbor. And it looked like we had all jumped in the Inner Harbor. Just as drenching as we've ever experienced. But that was very memorable as well. So
I know we got to talk
sports. Very fun.
I know we got to talk sports and life and everything else, but were you more drenched from that walk back, or the time you and I were at a Sonics game and you bit into caramel corn and broke your tooth and started sweating? Were you more drenched in Baltimore, or sitting next to me as you said, uh-oh, you had to get up and leave?
That was the pain sweats there. That was something else. So ESPN, your former employer, they're just getting monster ratings with this Michael Jordan documentary, and everybody seems to be watching and talking about it. You into it?
We are. It has been destination TV for us every, 6 to 8 o'clock at night, two episodes a week. Yeah, The Last Dance, they've called it, and Jordan finally releasing footage that has never been seen before. And just in our ear, and my wife Molly was a basketball player, and she had the Jordan Wings poster in her room, and, you know, had her first Jordan 3s that she wore in high school and everything else. So she's all in. We're all in. We're all watching it. And it's fun, man. It's fun because my girls are both basketball players, and it's fun to see them watch, you know, what was really our upbringing. I mean, that was prime time, the 80s and 90s, right? Was just, you know, when I was right in the middle of loving sport, and I loved basketball as well. And, you know, the one thing that I think it was Haley or Macy brought up, and we all were talking about after one of these episodes, was how much, Dory, these players in that era genuinely and truly hated each other. It was a vitriol unlike anything that you see, a rivalry unlike anything you see today in sports. And they're like, is that really what it was like? I mean, they hated each other back then. And it has been so diluted in the decades since then.
In part because things that would get you kicked out of a game today, they were doing 20 times a game back then, with the fouls and the club to the head and the cheap shots. And it was a physicality that we're never going to see again, because they'll kick you out today.
Yeah, it ran, that physicality ramped up the intensity, Dory. But I also think just from we are so connected for better or worse today. And, you know, I mean, we're seeing it now, and I know you've talked about it. and the Bellevue app that has tattletalers of people that are out and about in all these cities. Yeah. You're seeing, you know, we are so connected. We are so socially connected. And that's the negative. There's huge positives with it as well. But from a professional athlete standpoint, you know, these guys, they know each other from AAU. They know each other, you know, with the different in high school, in college, in tournaments, and all-star games. They all grow up around one another. In that day, you weren't connected. In that day, you didn't have and share marketing firms and agencies and huge agencies. You didn't put your own team together as LeBron has done in Cleveland, as he did in Miami, as he's done in L.A. Like, no. There wasn't any of that going on. And that level of connectedness was never there. And therefore, it was fierce, not only physically on the court, but it was fierce in its competition, too.
Well, yeah, instead of hugging after the game, you had the Pistons walking off the court with 8 seconds left because they hated being beat so bad. Hey, just real quick, we got about a minute left, but what are you hearing about college football, NFL football? I know the NFL schedule is going to be released tomorrow, but it's very unlikely that they're going to be able to stick to whatever schedule they release tomorrow.
Yeah,
what are you
hearing? There's a couple things. Well, they obviously got rid of all of the international games. Just said, that's not going to be a part of it this year, and try to simplify some of it down. It's I think actually been much more positive than you would think. It's on the professional end, and now whether they start a week or two late, whether they cut out the bye weeks, whatever they're going to do, I think the NFL showed the way with the draft. I think it showed the way with starting their season and you know the 2020 league year on time in March, doing a lot of that all obviously virtually. But I think they're plowing ahead, and I would be pretty darn surprised if they're not going in September. You know, college football, I think in many ways is following suit, Dory. We've talked about this, man. It is the engine that drives those universities, helps drive enrollment. Yeah. Certainly funds and supports athletic departments and all the other non-revenue sports. And it will be different. There will be different plans and places for the different states and the different conferences. But I think if we talked 2 weeks ago, the momentum and the energy is gone in, I think, a very favorable and positive direction over the last couple weeks.
With fans in the stands for the early season games?
Well, I think baseball is going to give us the first, you know, kind of harbinger of things to come in that way, Dory. And, you know, there was a leak note or, you know, kind of a leak earlier this week that everybody's poo-pooed because I don't think it's all signed off. But there is a lot of speculation that the year will begin in late June or early July. They're going to actually play in stadiums without fans to begin, but in time. And even if you're watching the Korean Baseball League on ESPN, you'll see fans not in the stadium, but they're outside the stadium. They're mulling around. So, you know, we've learned a lot in 50 days. I think we'll continue to learn a lot in the next 50. And before football season begins in 120, I think we'll have a lot better grasp of it.
We shall see. You know what? That 10 minutes is why we love having Brock Huard. Sean's playing out my song, Brock.
Which one? Hall & Oates?
It's not for you, though. This isn't directed at you. Off the air, Brock asked me what my favorite makeout song was as a... when I first started dating my wife. Bring it up, Sean. Bring it up loud. There we go. I listened to this album yesterday after my show. I sat on my deck in the sun, and I thought about days when I was young and kissable. All right, Brock Huard, everyone. See you at the Dory Monson Show. See you later. Thanks, Brock.
See you, bye.
What's more? The Dory Monson Show rolls on.
Rolls on.
We've had Mike Rowe, the host of Dirty Jobs, and just really, he's a great guy. We've had him on the show a couple of times, and Mike Rowe has been speaking out about just the inconsistencies that we are seeing right now, that good, hardworking business owners have to be shut down. Brown Bear Car Wash. They said, and Brown Bear is not a sponsor on the show right now. They used to be, but I just want to fully disclose that I don't have any current endorsements with them. But they had employees ready to go, and the state came in and shut them down today. You sit in your car, and you can do it with no human contact, but you can walk into a marijuana shop and get weed. None of it makes sense. And, you know, I mentioned the Washington Lottery has stayed open and in business. They are essential. But the person who has worked their, you know, their heart and soul for decades trying to operate a business. They're shut down. And Mike Rowe talked about how offensive it is when we have people like Jay Inslee, government politicians, telling us that we are non-essential.
Very few people were paying very little attention to these anonymous, unsung workers who were making civilized life possible for the rest of us. Well, we're in a different world right now. People got the memo. And so as we attempt to define essentiality, if that's a word, we need to think a little bit differently about the world we're in. 34 million people are out of work right now. And by definition, those people are out of work because, according to the governor, they are non-essential. But if you look at the impact of removing those workers from our economy, you know, our macro economy, you can see that they're absolutely essential. So language always matters, Dana. We've talked about it before. And this is one of those instances where the headlines have caught up to our vernacular. And if we don't make some tweaks to our lexicon, we're going to wind up sounding really, stupid.
He was talking to Dana Perino on Fox there. He also told The Blaze.
I think most of the country is going to come through this with the realization that we're being treated like children. And we're being fed platitudes and bowls of warm milk by people who want us to look at them as parents. And when that lands, things will change.
Yeah, you know, Jay Inslee, he's our data daddy. But then we found out at his press conference yesterday that this is going to be about a lot of social justice causes instead of just being laser focused on how to get all the unemployed in our region back to work. So we'll talk about that a little bit more in the big lead at 2. Also, yet another scandal has now been exposed with the Eastside Catholic football program. And it is shocking what the administration at the school is saying, because I know that they're not telling the truth. And I'll tell you about that coming up right after we check the news for you here on the Dory Monson Show.